Welcome to Window on North Korea. I'm Fran Kelleher, your host. This episode will give some perspective on public means of transportation in North Korea and the effects of the current international sanctions on North Korean travelers. Private cars, until just a few years ago, were very few and far between. One would always see pictures of the wide boulevards of Pyongyang with hardly a car in sight. It is still the exception for the average citizen to own a car, but they are becoming more prevalent in Pyongyang, likely other major cities as well. And apparently traffic accidents are, not surprisingly, on the rise as a result. North Korea doesn't share much information about its internal affairs, but a South Korean research team has inferred from North Korea's state media that accidents and driving violations are becoming a problem. While the state media would not publish negative information about North Korea itself, a study of the official media from 1945 through 2016 showed a rise in reports of traffic accidents in other countries, such as the U.S., Japan, South Korea, between the years of 2012 and 2015, just in the wake of the rising tide of private car ownership in North Korea. This is apparently their way of calling attention to the potential for a problem, while not admitting they might actually have it themselves. At least that is the inference from the researchers, according to an article published in the English language yonhapnews.co.kr website recently. According to the article, quoting, "In another sign of the growing seriousness of traffic accidents in the country, the communist regime has issued nationwide decrees in 2013 and 2015 warning of stern punishment for traffic violators, according to the research team. In the 2013 decree, the regime picked drunk driving, driving without a license, and hit and run as representative traffic violations and warned perpetrators of fines, suspension of driver's licenses, and even seizure of vehicles," the research report showed. The 2015 decree even portrayed traffic accidents as a poisonous act that impedes the regime's efforts to build a great socialist economic power, and as an act that benefits enemies trying to isolate and stifle the regime, according to the report. When we look at the two decrees, we can assume that traffic in North Korea became heavier and accidents happened frequently, the research team said. The repeated reports about foreign traffic accidents appear to be an attempt to prevent increased traffic accidents, leading to negative perceptions about the regime. Drunk driving and reckless driving are believed to be the main reasons for the increase in the North traffic accidents, in a nation where driving itself is considered a privilege and a demonstration of one's power, the research team said, end quote from the article. So if private cars and driving are still only for the privileged few, how is everyone else getting around? Perhaps my favorite authority on matters North Korean, Professor Andrei Lankov, a Russian living and teaching in South Korea, recently published an article on the nknews.org website titled, "North Korea's Bike Path. Sometimes illegal, sometimes encouraged, the North has an unusual relationship with bicycles." He recounts the off-again, on-again official attitude toward bicycles. They have been a major means of individual transportation since their introduction in the early 1900s, like the rest of East Asia. But since they lag behind probably every other East Asian country in private car ownership, bicycles continue to play a critical role in North Korean society. However, at least during the Kim family regimes and until the early 1990s, it was illegal to ride a bike in the city of Pyongyang. About this ban, Lankov writes, "I suspect that in the 1970s and the 1980s, the North Korean authorities kept in mind that Pyongyang was the city most likely to be seen by foreign visitors, so they did not want the revolutionary capital to be associated with hordes of cyclists, which they believed, with some reasons, would be perceived as a telltale sign of an underdeveloped country." End quote. Bicycles have always been in widespread use outside of Pyongyang, however. Then, in the early 1990s, when the North Korean economy and public transportation began to fall apart, largely because of the loss of its primary supporter, the Soviet Union, bicycles became legal in Pyongyang. They also became instrumental in facilitating the rise of the market economy, which materialized to fill the gap left by a failing government system of subsidies and rations. In 1996, however, Kim Jong-il instituted a ban on women riding bicycles. Two theories about the reason for this ban are that, first, since women are likely to wear pants when riding, but were banned from wearing pants outside the workplace at all at that time, they should not be permitted to ride bicycles, which would encourage the wearing of pants. And the second theory, the sexist belief that women are responsible for a disproportionate amount of traffic accidents, even on bikes. Fortunately, this ban was enforced only very sporadically and soon became unenforceable as women became the majority of market vendors and the market economy was assuming a more and more important role in the nation's economy. Another way that bicycles have contributed to an alternative economy is with the rise of bicycle repair shops. According to Lonkov, all bike repair shops are private. They have been on the rise since the late 1990s and are seen as a profitable type of small business. Since 1999, it has been obligatory to register one's bicycles nationwide. This is not unfamiliar to us Westerners. At least in cities, bikes here are licensed, though in North Korea, police also regularly check that the brakes on bikes are functional. But unheard of, at least to me, is the requirement of a riding license. Lankov writes, quote, "The bicycle owners are also required by law to have a riding license, which can be obtained only after passing a short exam. If someone is found riding without a license, the cyclist has to pay a fine. Riding under the influence is also punishable with a fine. Clearly, this was an attempt to emulate the car culture in what was then a carless society." End quote. So what kind of bikes do North Koreans ride? In the last decade, a joint venture with a Chinese company has resulted in North Korea providing 70% of its bicycle market. Pyeongjin bikes are said to be cheap and reliable. Their factory turns out 500 to 700 bikes daily in a variety of models. Before this venture, second-hand Japanese bicycles, mostly imported by North Korean sailors whose ships visited Japanese ports, were the most prestigious bikes to own, followed by Chinese models. North Korea has also made its own kalmegi, or seagull, model in prison camps for some time. Until the Pyeongjin models became available, however, reliable bicycles were relatively expensive for the average North Korean, and possession of a bike was a coveted status symbol. Affordability has changed, as has the attitude of the government, which now encourages bicycle use, especially in light of the current international sanctions being applied to North Korea. Fuel supplies are becoming scarce and expensive. This is reflected in a recent order by North Korean authorities to curtail use of motorized vehicles in favor of ox carts, according to a recent DailyNK.com posting. The cost of gasoline has approximately doubled in the last year, and the number of cars on the streets, while never really a lot, has fallen off by up to 40%. Gasoline and diesel prices and conservation measures have thus resulted in another boost for bicycle use, as well as, where applicable, ox cart use in the past several months. Professor Lonkov also contributed an article on the history and current status of railroads in North Korea to the nknews.org website recently. During their occupation of Korea from 1910 to 1945, the Japanese invested heavily in heavy industry and developed an extensive railway system throughout the peninsula. By the time the Japanese left, after their defeat in World War II, Korea had become, according to Lonkov, arguably the most industrialized part of East Asia, outside of Japan itself. They had built a total of nearly 4,000 miles of railway on the Korean peninsula, an area roughly the size of the state of Minnesota. Imagine that, 4,000 miles of railway in the state of Minnesota. Both in terms of density and technological sophistication, it was one of Asia's best railway systems. Of the nearly 4,000 miles, about 2,300 miles were in what was to become North Korea. Railroads remained the backbone of North Korea's transportation system for several decades after liberation from the Japanese. While roads were mostly unpaved and in bad condition, and fuel for alternatives like buses or cars was in short supply. Between the declining state of both the tracks, some dating back to the colonial era, and outdated equipment, frequent power failures of the electrical grid, on which about 80% of the track is dependent, and rising competition from privately owned trucks and buses since the early 2000s, the state of their railway system has deteriorated sharply. Yet people are still largely dependent on it for long-distance travel. Long delays are still a regular part of train travel, as most lines are single track, so a lot of time is spent waiting for trains passing in the opposite direction. I can attest to the clockwork operation of passenger trains in South Korea. It's a real joy to travel in that country by rail, but it sounds like a nightmare in North Korea. It's estimated a complete overhaul of their system would cost $25 billion. There has been a lot of talk about the Russians taking this on, but Lankov says, in a very disheartening statement, "Talks of the brilliant future prospects will continue, but not a single bulldozer will start work until the situation in and around Korea is judged sufficiently stable. That is, perhaps, for another half century." Well, that's kind of a dreary point to end on, that it may take yet another half century to reach a state of stability on the Korean Peninsula. One little bright spot came to my attention since I started preparing this program, and that's that electric cars have actually been sighted in North Korea. Not much is known about where they came from, how much they're used, how hard it might be to get them charged up there, but at least it's a sign of things to come, we hope. Window on North Korea airs midway through the Saturday morning mix on KTWH, approximately alternate Saturday mornings.